हरिः ॐ
सहनावगतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावरीतमस्थमाविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 56. Srila Prabhupada comments. When one actually awakens from material life, one understands his real position as an eternal servant of Krishna. This is called liberation. Muktir hit vanyata rupam swarupena vyabhastitihi. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.10.6. Under the influence of Maya, everyone living in this material world thinks that he is the master of everything. Ahankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate. Bhagavad Gita 3.27. One thinks, that there is no God or controller, and that one is independent and can do anything. This is the material condition. And when one awakens from this ignorance, he is called liberated. Maharaj Yati had delivered Daivayani from the well, and finally, as a dutiful husband, he instructed her with the story about the he-goat and she-goat, and thus delivered her from the misconception of material happiness. Devayani was quite competent to understand her liberated husband, and therefore she decided to follow him as his faithful wife. So that's the point of the commonality of nature. So then, because of her position, then she can understand, the spiritual importance. Right? He explains the story, and she can understand it. That's the importance of the equal nature, or similar nature. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, if she had such a different nature that she couldn't understand, then how will the benefit be made? Right? Sukadev Goswami. So this liberation, when you understand about the material world, one is able to think like that, that's a liberated state. So, there may be speculation on, okay, well, what's liberated and like that. But so Prabhupada defines here, that's liberated. When he understands that I'm the servant of the Lord, I'm the soul, I'm not the body, that's liberation. That's why all devotees, you can say, means are liberated. It's just a matter of realizing that liberation. Means they understand the principle, but when one actually realizes it, that this is the way one thinks, this is the way one acts, then you're able to act in that liberated position.
Does that mean that without that understanding, one can't really come down to preach at that level without getting contaminated?
No, it's anyone from any position. If you're doing it to please Krishna, then you're not under the modes. It just means that outside of preaching, then you may get distracted. But if you're preaching, then you're doing service, then you're not. It's not because devotional service is not controlled by the modes, so you're not in the conditioned state at that point. Does that make sense? But outside of that, then there may be. Does that make sense? But if one's liberated, then in all situations, all positions, one is always transcendental. Okay?
Mm-hmm. If we understand that, and this is called liberation, what's the point if we are not actually liberated because we are not realized, we don't act in such a way?
No, but if you if you know what is the standard, then you will be interested to move in that direction. And when these kind of understandings actually arise, you're not opposed to them. Does that make sense? Yeah, it's like, okay, let us say someone is, we understand the position of detachment, and that is actually the proper position. Not that detached, the soul can actually be detached totally. It has to be attached to something, so it means we're switching the material attachment for the spiritual, right? And so we make comments on those who are attached to the material, don't know about the spiritual, or those who are situated spiritually and but not attached to the spiritual. So we'll make comments about both of those, right? The karmis and the jnanis. But if we come to the point where we are losing our attachment for the material, but we're gaining attachment to the process of Krishna consciousness, then we would appreciate that that's a development, right? So let us say, for example, you have two friends, they're grihasthas, right? You know, seriously situated. Okay? Huh? Does that make sense? So, one of them, you know, just in the conversation, just mentions how, you know, that detachment is coming, he's understanding these things in this way and all that. But, you know, but then the other one comments, no, but how can you be like that? What about the family? How can you understand? So the one understands it, but he's dutiful. He continues doing what he's supposed to be doing. But the other one doesn't actually see the higher standard. There's no real understanding of it. So he doesn't see it as a goal to move forward, that's a progress. He just sees being absorbed in family life, that's a goal. So you have to be able to switch the goal forward. Though one's in material life, but the goal is forward in the actual spiritual standard. Or another example is that someone is there and, you know, they come to the temple, they start chanting, they start, you know, offering prasad, you know, coming to programs. But, you know, they're doing whatever they do. They're living their same lifestyle. Then with time, they start noticing that the devotees have a different lifestyle. Right? So then seeing that, then they think, oh, I would like to, you know, move forward more. They're more advanced than me. They're dealing culturally different, so I would like to do that. Right? But then someone says, oh, no, you don't have to do that. That's all externals. It's not important. The important thing is just your chanting and all that. Then that means that person is suggesting that they, again, also do not actually know the standard. They don't know the actual goal. So they can't see a progress. So they're attached to this lower level. And because for them, they're able to reconcile that in Krishna consciousness, they can't reconcile what's above that. Right? So they can't see this is a goal and this is where I'm at. No, it's where I'm at, that must be a standard because of my ego. Does that make sense? So one is able to give up that false ego, but at the same time being able to work with what actual conditioning you have, that's maturity. Right? So it's immaturity when it goes either way. You know, only if you're material, then you're being real. But no, if you have any of that attachment, you're just in total maya. And, you know, these kind of battles that go on and on and on and on. But the real point is that one can see what's beyond and not be distracted by that, you know, in either way. One is able to move forward to it, but one is able to function where one is. You know what I'm saying? Just like you get on you're starting a journey, you get on the train or whatever it is, and you know it's going to take 6 hours. And so you're peacefully sitting there, you know, you have your plan, you have something to eat, you know, you have your book to read or something like this, and you're cool. But then the other person is with you who hasn't done this before. They're freaking out. This is taking forever. When are we going to get there? This is like insane. This is, you know, it's just like, why don't you just calm down? You know, you're going to get there. Does that make sense? So that's why when it's actually understood, there's a maturity that's there. And when it's not understood, that's when you see the immaturity where it's, you know, us-ins and them-ins, you know.
those us and them.
Yes.
Both liberated. According to them.
Means they're liberated. But the point is how liberated? Like there's liberated, more liberated, and most liberated. And then I guess occasionally kind of liberated. Or occasionally liberated. So in other words, when they're in the kirtan, they're fully absorbed in the kirtan or in the association of devotees or hearing a chant, they are liberated.
From the monks, that's the point.
Yes, no, but they are at that point.
No, we are saying here.
But because they maintain that material identity, as soon as that's over, they go back to that and they slide back into their... But technically, the soul's always liberated. Every living entity. Because the soul actually can't be covered by material energy. They're more powerful than the material energy. But because the soul agrees to be to it, therefore one's control. It's just like, okay, you have an adult. You know, it's like that, what do you call it, that example Prabhupada gives of the, forget what he was, the prime minister or something, you know. And so, can he be controlled by a three-year-old child? No. He's running the whole country. You know, but because he agrees to be controlled by that child due to identity and affection or attachment, therefore then here's the head of the country down on his hands and knees playing horsey. Right? Does that make sense? And then you have people waiting who are big guys in, you know, the political circles, and they're waiting because he's playing horsey because the three-year-old's in control. So that's the whole thing. So because the soul agrees to it and then becomes conditioned to that, so we identify, that's why it appears that we're not liberated. But now with this, when one understands his real position, this is called liberation. Right? And then when one can always act on that platform, then that's then would be Brahma Bhuta. Does that make sense?
And if it's not always, we shouldn't technically call it Brahma Bhuta.
No, that's why we give Brahma Bhutas at the point of at the entrance to Bhava. The difference between conditioned life and constitutional life is that point between Asakti and Bhava. So when you cross that, you go into Bhava. So. But when one understands that, at that moment you're of understanding, you're liberated. Because you're thinking about it, you're seeing it as proper light and all that. And then, you know, someone calls and asks, did you remember to pick up the kids and take them to the dentist? And then that liberated position evaporates and one goes back to the unreal reality rather than the real reality. Does that work?
Yes.
Yeah? Okay. Yeah. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, thereafter Devayani, the daughter of Sukracharya, understood that the materialistic association of husband, friends, and relatives is like the association in a hotel full of tourists. The relationships of society, friendship, and love are created by the maya of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, exactly as in a dream.
Hotels
there? Manu talks about hotels. Yeah, no, they've always had that. That's an eternal principle. That's why we think it's new. We just make them more fancy. But see, the point is in Manu, hotels are where the king always has to have spies. Because hotels are where all the unsavory people get together and talk all kinds of nonsense and make all their plans. Because they figure there it's away from the standard social scene, and then you can, you know, discuss and do anything you want. Does that make sense? So therefore the king always has spies there to you know, take part in all that, you know. They got their grizzly beard and they got their beer and they're sitting there talking, what do you mean this and that, you know, and going on and getting involved with them and finding out what's going on. And then the evening he goes back and tells the king what's happening. You know, what's going on in the kingdom. Does that make sense? So those, how you say, in your most unrefined form. Those little places that have, you know, there's a roof there, there's the little place with the fire, the guy's cooking the tea, right? There's a little bench out front, you know, or inside or both. And people, and you got the little jar of biscuits there. And the people come there, hang out, drink their tea, chat a little bit, you know, like that. That's a hotel. You know, in India, they call them hotels.
Call it dhaba.
Dhaba, no, but that's yeah. But that's if it has rotis and stuff. But it just has, that's a hotel. Now, then some of them are bigger. They have that and places to stay. Right? Does that make sense? And then, you know, so we're moving up in the sophistication. Now, if they also have, you know, how you say, alcoholic beverages and how you say, freelance girls and all that, then, you know, it moves up in status as a hotel. Does that make sense? Like that. And if you can get rid of the cockroaches and that, then it moves up a bit more. So, like that. So, it's a hotel. We think that, oh, these fancy things. No. Any place where it's there where people can congregate and all that, and it's meant for people to congregate, that's a hotel. Thank you. Is that, okay. So you had all of those before. Right? So what she's meaning here is that husband, friends, relatives, it's like association, a hotel full of tourists. Everyone comes together. They're all from different places. They all chat. They all have a good time like that. And after they finish drinking their tea, then they all get up and go in their different directions. So this lifetime, people come together. They chat, this and that. Next life, they go in their different directions. So she's saying she understands that's actually what it is. So we think, oh, this is my husband. This is my friends, my relatives. But they'll all go in different directions. You know, after in the next life, you can't say who's going to be who. Right? So it's only when you have these higher qualities, like she, as a faithful wife, with that chastity, then she may go to the same place as the husband goes. But otherwise, if that's not there, then you're off in different directions. Is that so that's the whole point. And even then you say, but the Vedic rule is 7 lifetimes. So it doesn't say 8 or 6 or, you know, 22 or... You know, it's just 7 lifetimes, because it means that's the longest it appears you can keep, due to piety and all that, keep that together. Because generally at some point, due to piety, one becomes proud, and when he becomes proud, the whole thing falls apart. So it appears 7 lifetimes is all you can hold it together materially and be a nice guy. And then after that, then the samsara starts down the other side. You know, so then it won't stay together. Does that make sense? So even there, if you're looking at it still, what's 7 lifetimes compared to eternity? Yeah, still, but, you know, 700 years to unlimited. Yeah, so it doesn't. So it's just like in a dream that you can... So because there's common culture, that's why all those tourists can relate to each other. Right? So in the Vedic system, they can come from any part of India, but they could all sit there and all relate and interact and have, you know, and be very, very friendly and nice and all that. Does that make sense? You know, but if it's some kind of sci-fi hotel, then yeah, everybody's there, they're a little bit weird, and then it ends up more like a Western. Like that, you know. Does that make sense? Yeah. It starts to get more Tarantino-ish. Yes. Yes. Okay. By the grace of Krishna, Devayani gave up her imaginary position in the material world. Completely fixing her mind upon Krishna, she achieved liberation from the gross and subtle bodies. Right? So here, daughter of Sukracharya. So, you know, they're very elevated Brahmins, but they're associating with the demons, so they take on that mentality, because you can see before, she was very vengeful, very proud. So she was technically in a quite fallen position, I say. You know, the most elevated fallen position you can get in the material world, right? You know, so But then, by the association of the husband, always the proper performance of piety, and then by discussing spiritual understanding or Vedanta, then she came to this position, and she was able to give up her attachment. So,
Maharaj?
Yes.
Devyani initially was very envious of Sarmishta.
Yes.
And now, like, just with this knowledge, you know, she has come to a position of liberated.
Yes.
And, like, even she becomes liberated from the gross and subtle bodies.
Yes.
So is it because Vyayati himself was very advanced and she is his wife, therefore, as she is Ardhangini of him, so the half part of his piety has been transferred to him.
That's there. Advances. That's there. That assists. But the point is, the soul. Did you hear? Yeah. The soul at any time can take up spiritual position. Within the material, now that you're not going to be able to adjust. But the spiritual, at anybody at any time can take it up. Otherwise, how does Dasaratnakar or Magrari take it up? You understand? So, yes, by association, that's there. That's why association is said to be the most important. But you have to remember is that there is no cause for transcendental understanding, right? Other than association with those who are advanced. So you don't put it into a mechanic, so she's the wife, she gets 50%, so this, that. That will help. Just like it's easier to remember Krishna sitting in the middle of the temple room, you know, in front of the deities chanting japa, then let's say out on that front road out there, and, you know, it's a busy day. You know, takes 20 minutes to get from, you know, what would normally would take you 2 minutes takes you half an hour. Now, then that situation, you may not be as God conscious, right? So situation does help, but situation is not actually the cause of it. It means you can sit in the temple and not notice. If you've ever noticed the tourists who do come through the temple, some of them are just yelling and screaming, and where's that one? And this one got lost, and that one's over there, and why they're going so fast, and this, and it's all happening. Right? So the point is by association, that you could say. Right? And then the aspect of being the wife. Then that you could say that's an ideal situation. But the actual point is the association. Does that make sense? Srila Prabhupada explains, one should be convinced that he is a spirit soul, part and parcel of the Supreme Brahman, Krishna. But has somehow or other been entrapped by the material coverings of the gross and subtle bodies, consisting of earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. One should know that the association of society, friendship, love, nationalism, religion, and so on are nothing but creations of Maya. One's only business is to become Krishna conscious and render service unto Krishna as extensively as possible for a living being. Right. So now you see what we're getting now. We're in ninth canto now. So previously this point, we only saw a little bit of it coming up and starting in sixth canto. Right. Like that is even you're talking because society, friendship, love, nationalism, that we're always talking about. Right. Right from the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. But we see is only later in the understanding does religion come in as one of the things that also can be illusory, right? Because a religion is working with the mechanical laws that govern a particular, entity in connection with another entity in a particular environment. Because each entity has their nature, and the environment has its nature. So, understanding that, functioning within that, that's religion. Right? That's why, and religion you can't change, that's created by the Lord. But you can say, oh, but it's religion, but the material nature is all also created by the Lord. It functions according to this religion. Right? So each aspect in the overall religion is having its place. But people not seeing beyond, they only see the religious aspect dealing with themselves. And even that unless you're trained, you won't see it. That's what I'm saying. The Vedic culture, it's all about education, so that you get trained. What is the religion that you're functioning within? What is the religion that's governing your environment? Right? Because we take it that, oh, you know, okay, Christianity, Buddhism, that this is religion. No, that is a form of dealing with religion. A religion is inherent in something. The desk holds things off the floor. That's what makes it a desk. So its religion is holding things off the floor. So if you use it for holding things off the floor, then the religion is proper. If you take the book, put it on the floor, put the desk on top, that's irreligious. Right? You want something to be salty, you put sugar in it. That's irreligious.
It's offensive.
Huh? Okay, that's an offense. Okay, that's it. Well, that's why, because of the religion, right? Okay. You understand? So that's the thing. The Vedic concept of religion is so much broader. You know, even when we say we're Westerners, like that, we have our nature. Yes, but who gave that nature? Krishna. What's that nature called? Mlechas and Yavanas. It's already there in the Vedas. We're thinking, oh, we're modern people, we're this, we're different, we're unique. Mlechas and Yavanas have been there since the beginning. Right? Like that. That's in the fine print, right? In the beginning, there were Mlechas and Yavanas. And the Lord saw it, and it wasn't so good.
So Mlechas and Yavanas, they created themselves. They were not created by God.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So, you understand? So, that's the whole thing, is we can't say, because it's already being governed. You say, when you identify that way, then yes. What does it mean? Means one doesn't follow the Vedic rules as a Mlecha. If one's opposed to the rules, that's a Yavana. So, we think it is modern, intellectual, you know, very thoughtful, very intelligent. That we're, you know, we don't just follow, we don't just blindly follow, you know, we discuss these things and don't follow them after discussing them. So we didn't even need to discuss them because we wouldn't have followed them anyway. So why make the pretense that I'm an intellectual?
But if you don't follow and oppose, what is called?
Yavana.
Of the both.
Mlecha just doesn't follow because they don't know. Yavana means they're actually directly opposed to it.
And don't follow.
Yeah, it means like you have the tribals, they're Mlechas. But they're not opposed to the Vedic culture, they just don't know it's there, don't value it. But those who try to destroy the Vedic culture, that's Yavana. So like the Mughals when they came in, or the British, or that's Yavana. But in general, then the lifestyle is that of a Mlecha.
Maharaj,
yes.
When someone opposes the Vedic culture, they're Yavanas by definition. But then there can be some... as you mentioned, for the Mughals and the British, they don't have knowledge of Vedic culture and therefore they oppose. But there could be some Hindus also who do have knowledge and still they oppose, you know.
But then they're Yavanas, that's all. Who cares? That's why we say all these people, they try to make their own mark, that they're unique and different and take their own angle. That's the Yavana nature. See, Mlecha generally are meat eaters. Yavanas don't have to be meat eaters. So you can be a Yavana and be, you know, not a meat eater. Generally they go together. But you could have, that's our point. So that's what we're saying, is that that's Maya Pratijnana. Their intelligence is stolen by illusion. Is that?
Yeah, thank you. And this definition that you mentioned about revision, you know, working with the mechanical laws for functioning with one entity and another.
Yes.
So these mechanical laws, we can say technically to be Varnashram Dharma.
The laws, you can say, is the modes of nature. They're the laws of nature that's governed by the modes of nature. So that's, so how does the human being fit into their position within the creation? That's Varnashram Dharma. So that's why it's also Dharma. But the whole point of all dharmas is to serve Krishna. So that's why Sarva Dharmam Parityajya. Doesn't mean you give up performing the activity, you give up performing the activity because of the result it gives. Right? I do my duty because it gets me a nice result. That's religion. I do my duty to please Krishna. That's sad dharma. So I have to give up dharma for sad dharma.
Yeah.
Generally, it's thought if I take up Saddharma, I don't have to practice all this. See, we don't have to practice all that. Why would we say that? Because of the background of being Mleccas and Yavanas. Others would think, oh, okay, so I'm too much absorbed in the ritual. Right? Like Smartas, they're absorbed in the ritual. So for them, it's totally about religion. It's not about Saddharma, about pleasing the Lord. It's about, I follow these rules, I get what I results. Right? You know, you want a ticket, you stand in the line, you didn't cut the line, you didn't bother anyone, you waited patiently, you got to the counter, you got your ticket, now you get to go inside. That's Dharma. You understand? So they're like that. They follow very, very nicely. So that's what it's talking about. So someone who actually understands the situation, then they'll understand when it says giving up religion, it gives up means giving up the materialistic concept of the forms of religion, of the benefit I'll get. So we give that up simply how to serve the Lord. Otherwise, society, friendship, love, nest. So we're not in a society, we don't have friends, there is no affection. So it means if we're going to throw out religion, we have to throw out all of those. And then we throw that out, you end up with anarchy. Right? And even they're not very good because they can't agree on how to be an anarchist. You know? Does that make sense? But that's the problem. So what I'm bringing out here is that here now, before this religion wasn't brought up, it's a matter of, yes, you connect it to the Lord. But this point of its being not important, we see as we go in the Bhagavatam, it becomes a stronger, stronger point. Is that the ritualistic aspects of religion, if we maintain attachment to that and not to Krishna, we've missed the point. But if we maintain that attachment to Krishna, then we practice those religious activities to please Krishna as a way to show our affection, then they're useful. And if you don't have ideal situations to express that religious aspect, then because the mood is right, it works. But for a smarta, if they don't have perfect material arrangements, it doesn't work. Right? You know, you only have mud from one side of the river. You know, your yajna will not work. You have to have from both sides. But for the devotee, then he's trying. He tried, but then somehow or another, the guy that came from the other side got on the wrong bus and ended up in, you know, somewhere out in Malda or something. Then, hey, you know, you go on. It's for Krishna. It works out. But for the smarta, he won't get the result. Does that make sense? That's the point. So religion's important in that it's the nicest form to engage in service to the Lord. Because who's made religion? Krishna. He makes. We don't make. You know, people make up their own religion. Right? You know, like that. And, you know, people who are not interested in real religion, they may follow it. You know, like that. Does that make sense?
Yes. Why Bhaktivinoda Thakur say that Christianity is a religion for Mleccas?
Why is Christianity a... What does Mleccas mean? One, it means the one who doesn't follow the Vedic literature. So that's everybody. Right? Who's not following. And the other aspect that means is they're meat eaters.
Yes.
So do the Christians not fall into those two categories? It's not saying that they're the only exclusive Mleccas. Because people who, you know, have those two qualifications that are not Christian can also be Mleccas. So the Vedas is very liberal, you know, and open that all people, whoever qualifies, it's by qualification. It's not by, you know, hereditary or, you know, what's it called, patronage, you know, stuff like that. It's just because you were supportive, you get a position and all that kind of thing, like in governments or, you know, business or family or things like this. No, this is open. Anybody can qualify. Very broad.
You know, Christianity also support the worship of God and love God.
Yes, but they're using a malecha medium for that. Yes, no. And which Christians are you talking about?
Inquisition.
Original Christians.
Original Christians. Yeah. Those ones we'll agree with. Those ones were good. So the first 50 years, yes, we'll agree with. After Paul, then we have some problems. Yeah. Right? Because before that, they were following a religion given by God. And then, in other words, they had both that philosophy and that religion. Then Christianity, throughout the religion, created their own religion. Kept the philosophy, though. So you understand the thing? That's a very common thing. Sometimes we also find the Society of Devotees, they accept the philosophy but not the religion, and tend to, oh, all this Vedic is archaic, throw that out, we're modern people. We identify with the Western world. Right? You have to remember, Judea was east, and Rome was west. Even when we call it, you had the Eastern Empire, you know, Constantinople and that, and the Western Empire in Rome. So what you know as Christianity is Western Christianity, which means that they gave up the teachings of the East, or the religion of the East. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's the same thing that devotees try to do now. Same parallels. We accept the Krishna consciousness philosophy, throw out the religion. So then it was to be Romans, now it's to be, you know, whatever, some variety of first world, you know, like that. Does that make sense? So, that they accept one God, but the thing is, how far do they take it? What's the reason for accepting God? Is it to develop love for God? Some say, but also some of them, they had problems. You know what I'm saying? Like that. The administration calls them over the side and says, stop speaking like this, otherwise you got a problem.
But there was really some great sage in Christianity. They attended love.
Okay, yeah. but the point is for one, you know, two persons here and there, nice. And then out of 2 billion. Why are they following, what's their purpose in following God? Some people, it's just, it creates order. If there's a supreme, there's laws. People tend to follow laws of the supreme. Therefore, it'll create social order. So it's not actually dharma. It's not actually religion on the platform of Manamoy. It's economics, because it creates social consistency. You understand? So you have to be able to distinguish there. You have the gross materialist who's just into sense gratification. Then, within Anamoy, then you also have a refined sense gratifier. Right? He can tell the difference between, you know, rotten grapes that are just from last year and that are from 20 years ago and that are from this valley, or this place or that place. Right? So they're refined sense gratifiers. But they're still just on the platform of Anamoy. Then within Pranamoy, then you have those that it's about just working together and all that for that purpose. Then if we work together, we can get more economics, more art, more science, you know, more sense gratification, more money, facility, right? Then within those, some sees that, okay, people don't really want to follow just because this one said or that one said, and everyone has a different opinion. But if you have a supreme opinion, God says, then everybody follows, then that social order that you want is accomplished. So they accept the supreme, but it's not for the purpose of actually following the supreme. It's for the purpose of social construct, right? Does that make sense? Then you have Manamoy, where they accept that God is, you know, it's about trying to do things because God said, not because of the social order it will create. Those are the ones you're talking about. Right?
Yeah.
But most people are on the lower levels. So yes, if you get to that level, but that's what we're saying. So it's not just because they're Christian. We're talking about there's levels of consciousness. You come up to these and you realize more. So someone like that, if they come in contact with the Vedanta philosophy, then it would make more sense to them. But even in that, why do they serve God? Simply out of fear. Right? That's generally why it's there. Because if you do wrong, then you're going to get a bad. You know, you do right, then you get a good. So it's out of fear. It's not actually out of affection. So how many are preaching it's out of affection? You understand?
Yeah.
So we're not denying that there's not individuals who can take advantage of these things. But the point is in general, is that what's being discussed? Right? So they're talking about religion here, nationalism, religion. So nationalism, why is Christianity considered a superior religion over all other religions? Because of the particular nationalistic background. Because Christianity is seen as a first world thing. Right? Well, even, you know, if you take East Orthodox or Oriental, or, you know, like this, Orthodox, then that's considered, you know, too far east. It's not first world. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, if you say that we are Hindus, we support Hinduism, then you'll be laughed at Chinese. So what's the use of Hinduism? It's undeveloped.
Undeveloped. Just point out to them that their whole basically, medicinal and philosophical things are all based on Hinduism if they knew some history. But since they don't know history, then who's to be laughed at? They say undeveloped, but they don't know their history, so then...
Yeah.
And where did that yellow emperor come from? He can't come from farther east, because that's ocean. So that means he came from west. And what's west? India. So then your whole middle empire is based on an Indian. Your whole martial arts is based on an Indian. Your whole medical science is based on Ayurveda. So, and that was before China was China. I mean, you had tribals running around and, you know, like this, but, you know, once they're organized into an empire. So that was already there before. So who's the undeveloped people here? Right? So if they consider China so developed, fine. But where is that based on? That's based on what they got from the Veda and those who practiced it. Right? So as that means, then you can't say they're undeveloped.
It's very difficult for them to digest, to swallow this.
There's a lot of things they can't digest, like milk. You know, so that's why there's tofu. At the same time, there's so many things they can digest that others would not even want to attempt to digest.
Some raw fish.
Not so much. That's a little farther east. But I think they do. No, though they cook it just slightly so that it's still breathing, but it's been cooked when they bring it out.
Yeah.
That's Japs can't get to that. Someone was pointing out, says, some businessman was saying to another businessman, I'm going to make this presentation. And the other one was saying, no, it's too long. But no, but it's thorough, it's this and that. He says, listen, they don't even have the patience to cook their fish. They eat it raw. You think they're going to listen to this? So that's Japan. China, they take the trouble to just cook it. Yeah, yeah. You understand? So it's just a matter of knowing the actual things, and then like that. You know. But otherwise, if you go to the border, yes, there's quite a bit of difference. It's like this: some journalist or that went to the border, right? Indian border and China border. On this side, you come across the border. It's complete chaos. You know, there's little rickshaws and this, and complete jungle, right? Like that. You go to the other side. You get on. You go through all this modern stuff. Get on this train that goes like 400 miles an hour, something ridiculous. You know, takes you actually into the next city and stuff like that. And then you go through all the formalities. So if you go to that point, yes, then one will have that confusion. You know, but that's there. But if you go up like in the, you know, how you say, the Gobi Desert, what do you call it?
Yeah, Gobi Desert.
Yes.
Gobi.
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 Okay, that's different, because Gobi here means cauliflower. The desert of cauliflower, but there's no desert. Or it's a desert, you know, you say, so there's lacking cauliflowers. No cauliflower. Yeah, no cauliflower.
It used to have cauliflower.
Yeah, it used to have cauliflower, but now it doesn't. So. Then, you know, how sophisticated are the people up there? Or out in the, you know, out in the West, or different, you know, so you have your places where they're not, and you have your spots where they are, but you can come over here, there's spots also, so. You know what I'm saying? Difference is that they're following their culture, here they're not. You know, just give these guys long enough, and then it'll work out. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good, we can move on.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah, okay, good. Okay. One's only business is to become Krishna conscious and render service unto Krishna as extensively as possible for a living being. Right? So extently according to your nature and your facility, what you can do, that much you render that service. In this way, one is liberated from material bondage. By the grace of Krishna, Devayani attained this state through the instructions of her husband. Srila Sukadeva Goswami concluded, O Lord Vasudeva, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, you are the creator of the entire cause of manifestation. You live as the Supersoul in everyone's heart, and are smaller than the smallest. Yet you are greater than the greatest and are all-pervading. You appear completely silent, having nothing to do, but this is due to your all-pervading nature and your fullness and all opulence. I therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, by what practice does one absorb the mind in Krishna? One does this by offering respects, by meditation and chanting. When Ambarish was the emperor of the seven islands, it is understood that Yayati was the ruler of Bharatvarsha. Footnote 27. Srimad Bhagavatam 9.18.46 describes Yayati as the ruler of the seven islands. This must mean seven Varshas out of nine belonging to Bharatvarsha. Simultaneously, Ambarish ruled the seven islands made by the seven oceans. Right, so you have two. So here you say seven oceans, seven, you know, islands, and this can mean this within Bhumandala you have seven oceans. You know, salt water, fresh water, milk, yogurt, ghee, like this, and those ones. Then you have within Jambudweep, right? You have your nine places, but within Bharatvarsha, then you'll have what we are, you know, to at least some degree know. I mean, even we only know part of Bharatvarsha, isn't it? I don't remember what's the first.
You know that 1/9 of it.
Yeah, 1/9 of it. Then within that, we have seven islands and seven oceans. You know, Pacific Ocean, Atlantic, and, you know, whichever ones that they count as the main ones. Right, you know. Does that make sense? So, it appears that he was within Bharatvarsha. Then was of these. So either of them, seven parts out of the nine parts of Bharatvarsha, or within this one part that we're on, Bharatakanda, then here the seven, you know, what we know as the earth, that total thing. So either that much or that and beyond. But not as big as, how do you say, Ambarish. Ambarish is the eighth in the following line. Brahma, Marichi, Kashyapa, Vibhasvan, Shraddhadeva, Naghava, Nabhaga, and Ambarish. Yayati was the eighth in the following line. Brahma, Atri, Chandra, Buddha, Pururava, Ayu, Nahusha, and Yayati. Right, so it's a different how you say it? The
Sun dynasty and Moon dynasty.
Sun and Moon, and also just different gotras, right? Different Prajapatis.
Okay. They all come from Brahma. It's always like this.
Yeah, it has to, because all 21 Prajapatis can go. They're either sons of Brahma or grandsons of Brahma. So all 21. So that means all living entities come out of these 21 Prajapatis. That means everything. Right, so then everybody goes back to Brahma, and Brahma goes back to Vishnu, right? And Vishnu is an expansion of Krishna. So,
how many Prajapatis do we have?
21.
Seven sages, they're not Prajapatis,
are they? Seven sages may be a Prajapati, but they change. Because Vishishta is, I think, now is a Prajapati. I mean, is a seven sage.
He's a seven sage.
And he's a Prajapati, I know, isn't it? Vishishta, he's the son of Brahma, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and he's not a, he's, in other words, he's not Narad Muni, Lord Shiva, or the Kumaras. So you take away those three out of ten, right? Then those seven that are left are Prajapatis, and then some of their sons are Prajapatis. So another, that's seven, so another 14. So I think Kasyapa's in the next line. Isn't he? I don't think he's a son of Brahma.
Marichi's son is
special. Yes, Kasyapa. See here, so he's a grandson of Brahma. Like that. Does that make sense? So Vivasvan's not a Prajapati, but he's in the line of kings, because the Prajapatis are all living entities. Then within the humans, within the kings, then you have two lines, that coming down from the sun, that coming from the moon.
So technically all the living entities either belong to the sun or the moon dynasty.
No. All kings belong. But when you get above, then, you know, yakshas, rakshasas, they're not in that line. But they're sons of the they're coming down from the Japatis.
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
Mm-hmm.
Means the kings that are here, then it's according to Sun Moon Dynasty. But someone like Indra knows that's not about Sun and Moon Dynasty.
Okay.
It's only us humans that you have Sun and Moon Dynasty.
Okay. Okay.
Yes.
We say that there are kings, brahmanas, yakshas, rakshas, antarikshas.
Yes.
But the lower species of humans, they actually degraded. They're not created like that. Because
Mlechas, no, they can be created like that. Like when those were all created by Surabhi. Like I think she was when she was the who came? Ah, that's when they that the friendly how you say beginning of the friendly relationship between Vishishta and Vishwamitra. Because Vishwamitra came as a king. Same kind of thing as Kartavirya Arjuna. He came and somehow or another ended up at Vishishta's ashram. And he's with his whole army. And so with his one cow, he takes care of everyone. So then, naturally, then the idea is that, okay, you just have this simple Brahmin with this, but we're the kings, we're the emperor. So we should have such high-grade things. So they tried to take the cow. Or like ask for the cow, or demand of the cow, or something like that. And Vishishta, being you know just that self-satisfied Brahmin, it's like, well, what can he say? And so then Surabhi, then she comes to him and says, "Okay, they're going to take me away. Is that because you're dissatisfied with me? And that's why you're letting?" And he says, "No. So you would want me to stay or not?" He says, "Personally, I'd like you to stay." Right. And so that's all she. And so then she asks, "So if I can arrange that I can stay, then, like, as I can understand, you as a Brahmin, you have to just, you know, what the Lord provides. So if I can arrange to stay, then that's okay." And as soon as he said yes, she took on this huge form. And then from all of her flanks and that came these Yavana armies, Malecha armies, you name it armies, that were all, you know, basically subhuman that came out. And and drove him for 80 miles. They had to run for 80 miles straight without stopping. And on the way, then her armies are killing everybody until after 80 miles, the only one left is Vishwamitra. And then I guess she turned around and went back to the ashram.
But the guys remained? The army?
No, they were all killed.
Her army?
Oh, yeah, that's what we have nowadays. That's it. That's why you see they're so militant, all these guys.
They came from the cow.
So did onions and garlic. So like that. Have to come from somewhere. Like that. You know, I mean, Madhu and Kaituba, they wanted to eat Brahma. So do we see them in a good light? No, even though they came from Brahma. No, they came from the Lord, right? Like that. So the thing is here is that the Malechas, yeah, they come from Sarabhi, but then they eat Sarabhi, so you can't make those connections. They should make the connection, but they don't. Is that okay? So yes, there's a reason for everything. Nothing happens just by chance. Because if it did, then people would doubt the system. Right? There has to be a scientific reason behind. So everything has its scientific reason.
So Maharaj, I read Prabhupada's comment on Bhagavatam. He says that the Caspian Sea is the place of Kashyapa Muni.
Yes.
So since Kashyapa Muni is the first Mahārāja, so that means that area is the civilization in that area is more ancient than India.
No. The point is it's just a matter of Bharatvarsha is the whole planet. Now, if you're just going to live in the forest and do yajñas and just live like that, then that's a very nice area for that. So Paramahamsas live there. But if you're actually going to follow the structural form of Varnashram, then you have to be down in Aryavarta. Then you need to be here. Right? Because there it's not meant for, you know, farming and ruling and doing all those different things. There it's just Paramahamsas live there and they don't worry about it.
Yeah.
You understand? So it's just like sages go to the forest. Yeah. Why that way? They go farther up north, Gundamunda in a mountain. That's way beyond here. You know, like that. And so it's that they can move around freely. So it's just a place that's out of the way. That's a favorable place like that. You know, got nice melons, you know, so... Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, but it seems Kashyapa Muni has a bigger family and like, yeah, they live in a very, very developed life. And he has many wives and children, you know, so it's a big dynasty. Like.
Yeah, but do you hear of them going out to... having to go out, catch the train in the morning to go to work, or?
No.
Kashyapa came back late because he got stuck in traffic.
Yeah.
You know, but it's not, that's the only place he hangs out. He has other places. Yeah. You know, when the dinya are happening, that's where you go. That makes sense? Like Indra, he has his place on top of Meru, he has a place in the Loka Loka mountains. Yamaraj has a place in Loka Loka, he also has down in the, you know, the bottom of the universe. So, I mean, so they have places all over. Kailash is above, you know, outside the universe. It's also, then he has his place within, then he has his place in the Himalayas. So, yes? So don't get too distracted that people have more than one place to live.
Yeah. Beyond our imagination.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Because of the influence of Ambarisha, Yayati, who was absorbed in material enjoyment, developed great devotion. Because of Yayati's association, Devayani also developed great devotion. When the dynasty from the sun and moon begins simultaneously, and when the emperors of the sun dynasty rule the seven islands, the kings of the moon dynasty rule Bharatvarsha. When the members of the moon dynasty become emperors of the seven islands, then the members of the sun dynasty become the kings of Bharatvarsha. This is how the sovereignty of the dynasties of the sun and moon operate. So that's a very nice point. So it's just a matter of who's running what. So one's running the seven islands here, and one's running the whole Bhumandala. So, because we would see before when we were discussing Manus, they're always managing the whole Bhumandala. Right? Like that. And then whoever, that whichever dynasty they're in, then the other ones are doing the other side. And figure out classes going on. So we go behind. Srila Prabhupada adds, how Devayani became self-realized by the grace of a great husband, Maharaja Yati, is described here. Describing such realization is another way of performing the bhakti process. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, Smarnam Padasevanam, Archanam Bandhanam Dasyam Shakyam Atmanivedanam. Hearing and chanting about the transcendental holy name, form, qualities, paraphernalia, and pastimes of Lord Vishnu. Remembering them, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, offering the Lord respectful worship, offering prayers to the Lord, becoming a servant, considering the Lord one's best friend, and surrendering everything unto him, these nine processes are accepted as pure devotional service. Srimad Bhagavatam 7.5.23. Shravanam Kirtanam, hearing and chanting, are especially important. By hearing from her husband about the greatness of Lord Vasudeva, Devayani certainly became convinced and surrendered herself unto the lotus feet of the Lord. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. This is knowledge. Bahunam Janmanam Ante Jnanavanmam Prapadyante. Bhagavad Gita 7.19. Surrender to Vasudev. Oh, I see. Surrender to Vasudeva is the result of hearing about him for many, many births. As soon as one surrenders unto Vasudeva, one is liberated immediately. Because of her association with her great husband, Maharaj Yayati, Devayani became purified, adopted the means of bhakti yoga, and thus became liberated. Right? So here the focus is on the association, not on just me. Conclusion. To have a satisfied mind, one must give up his heart disease of lusty desires. Because if one cannot control his lusty desires, he will never be pleased, if he gets all the material wealth of the world. We have actually seen, especially in the Western countries, that men who have reached more than 80 years of age still go to nightclubs and pay heavy fees to drink wine and associate with women. Although such men are too old to enjoy anything, their desires have not ceased. As supplying butter to a fire does not diminish the fire, but instead increases it more and more, the endeavor to stop lusty desires but continue enjoyment can never be successful. In fact, one must voluntarily cease from material desires. One becomes Krishna conscious, then he can give up this heart disease. Otherwise, this disease of lusty desires will continue, and one cannot have peace of mind. Therefore, only a Krishna-conscious person who knows the aim and object of life is peaceful. So that connection to Krishna, that's the difference between love and lust. Love means it's connected to Krishna. The same thing applied for sense gratification is called lust. Right? That's why it's so powerful, right? Lust in the material world is so powerful, because that's the inherent nature of the soul, is to love Krishna. But when that becomes misdirected, then that becomes the prominent goal. We have so many other goals, but this goal trumps all other goals. Right? That's the whole point, is that then one is able to see that. One is able to see is that actually, and so what's the difference? Am I doing it for myself, or I'm doing it to please Krishna? Right? So if I'm going to do it for myself, I'm going to use forms that I'm comfortable with. If I'm doing it to please Krishna, I'm going to use forms that Krishna is comfortable with. Right? And Krishna's the way he, since he's made everything, he's made the system so that everyone, according to their nature, can be comfortable in service to Krishna. It's just a matter of where you start from, yourself or Krishna. That's all. That's the point. Pure devotion means it starts from Krishna. Mixed devotion means it starts from ourselves and gets to Krishna. So if it's more about ourselves, lower level. It's more about Krishna, then it's a more advanced level. So this knowledge was given to, understood by Yayati from Ambarish Maharaj and given to Devayani, and so we see everybody's perfect. Yes?
Are all relationships and interactions in the world based on selfishness?
Yes.
Symptoms of selfishness.
Means you'll see the external symptoms of it, but the underlying you won't see. Is what happens is that you have knowledge and skill, right? That's the, you could say, your basic level. Now, you have to operate that knowledge and skill, right? So just operating it and getting a tangible result, people will appreciate that. But higher than that, then is the attitude or the qualities you use to obtain that. Right? So I have knowledge and skills, but when you apply it, it's just not mechanical. The mind's involved. So what are the qualities of the mind when one is applying that?
In other words, just knowledge.
Yes, like that. So then that's going to be your higher aspect of these two. Now, let us say we see the higher aspect. Someone is, you know, seemingly selfless and committed to others and is gentle and is considerate. These are simply the qualities they're using the knowledge and skills with. But the ultimate in Prayojana, then what is the ultimate purpose of it? Is it to please the Lord? And if it's not, it'll be ultimately to please themselves. Right? In other words, let's say you have that person who is so, you know, philanthropic or altruistic and really caring and all that, but his identity is, I'm a philanthropic, or I'm a nice guy. So he's actually serving himself, you know, cultivating himself as the nice guy. Others get benefit from it. That's the whole point of pranamoy, is that others can get benefit. Like that. But the point is it's about themselves, ultimately. So
things like ethics and morals,
they're just instruments. Ethics is doing the right thing. Morality is how it makes others feel. Right? So in other words, one is dealing with the mechanics, one is dealing with the attitude. Morality is an attitude. Right? Does that make sense? So, yeah. So, say, okay. The person is okay, going on with, how you say, using the he goat, she goat, that's going to work best in this. Okay, so he goat has she goat. But he-goat's interested in other she-goats. So, ethically, then, technically, he shouldn't be interested in other she-goats. Because the interaction with the main she-goat and other she-goats is the same mechanics. It's not something different. Right? So, therefore, ethically, technically, means mechanically, what's the difference? Right, especially if it's a matter of he has many wives, so then what's the problem? Because then he gave the example, is Sarmishta is also one of his wives. So technically, ethically, it's not really a problem. But morally, how does it make Devayani feel? Right, that makes her feel bad. So in other words, one is mechanical right and wrong, the other is emotional right and wrong. Does that make sense? So the emotional is considered higher. So we don't necessarily make a distinction between the two. That's just because it's an area of non-scientifics in the modern. Otherwise, Niti Shastra is called ethics and morality because it's how to mechanically deal both on the actual tangible results and also on the subtle, the emotional results. How will people how will people perceive it? How will they feel? How to get those results? But the point is why you should be doing that, then that becomes the question, why it's just niti. Because dharma is higher than that. So that means niti is applied according to the rules of dharma. Right? And dharma is applied according to the rules of bhakti. So then someone who's practicing bhakti then uses the form of dharma according to the detail of niti. And so that's how then they're successful. That's why you see all these great personalities, they're successful. Because they're not neglecting any of these levels. Ultimately successful because it's all about Krishna. Then they're situated properly in the overall that we see them. Yudhishthira Maharaj, great person, dharmic, religious, does it because of his dharma. But how is he such a good emperor? We don't find any flaw in his administration. That's because he's using niti perfectly. But because that's already been described in other places, we don't have to show how Yudhishthira is doing that, because his example is how he's connected to the bhakti side of it and the religious side of it. That's the outstanding. Niti is just standard. You know, it's like, you know, opening a can of beans. It's not that every time you have to, you know, let's say the president's opening a can of beans. It's not that you have to get into it in the technique, because everybody opens a can of beans. Now, when he opens a can of worms, now that's what we talk about. Yeah, but if it's a can of beans, who cares? Does that make sense? Okay, so we'll end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitya Gaura Vrinda.